So my name is José Bové. Listen to health writers if you are concerned about the health of the body politic.
Health Writers on the Air. I'm your host this evening, Steve Blank. Tonight, we're following the money and seeing how cuts in healthcare services in Wisconsin are affecting our community. Our first story features health writer Gary Karch's interview with Amanda Harrington about how Governor Walker's budget cuts to Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin will impede access to reproductive health care for men and women throughout the state. Next, health writer MJ LaPlay speaks with Sean Doherty about how former Governor Doyle's attempt to cut the budget by contracting with private firm Logisticare to arrange transportation for Medicaid patients is already causing serious problems. And what happens when improperly delivered medical services result in catastrophic damages to patients? Health writer Thomas Kozlowski reports on changes to medical malpractice lawsuits that leave victims high and dry. Let's get started with Gary Karch.
This is Gary Karch with Health Writers, and I'm in the studio today with Amanda Harrington, who is the spokesperson for Planned Parent Advocates of Wisconsin. Amanda, welcome.
Thank you so much.
Could you just briefly explain what kind of services Planned Parenthood has provided?
Sure. Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin is the state's largest, oldest, and most trusted reproductive health care provider. We have 73,000 patients all around the state who come see us at 27 health centers. We're in communities all over. We have two health centers here in Madison. And here in Dane County, we care for about 12,000 women and men. The services we provide include cancer screenings, annual exams, STD testing and treatment, birth control, and that accounts for that basic preventive health care accounts for well over 97% of the services we provide. And also here in Wisconsin at three of our health centers, we provide abortion care, which is a critical component of women's health care.
And that's what's being challenged right now legislatively. In other states, there's been lawsuits filed against the anti-abortion legislation. Could you explain how that might happen in Wisconsin?
Sure. I think, one important thing to realize, there was just a national study that came out yesterday. And in 2011, states all across the country have seen many, many more abortion restrictions enacted than ever before in the history of this country. We're looking at very draconian legislation meant to put up serious barriers in women's ability to access comprehensive reproductive health care. So there are legal challenges to those, but states are also at the same time creating new and dangerous restrictions on women's access to birth control at the same time. And that's what's happened here in Wisconsin, where legislators have eliminated state funding to 9 Planned Parenthood health centers that only provide preventive reproductive health care. We serve 12,000 patients at these health centers. And the centers are located in small communities like Kenosha, Shawano, places where Wisconsin Rapids, Oshkosh, places where there isn't another provider for these women to turn to. So I do think, this is an exceptionally difficult time. They've also put up serious barriers in the Medicaid Family Planning Program, where the Department of Health Services is now going to seek to restrict eligibility for that program. And this is a program that currently serves 57,000 uninsured Wisconsinites. It helps them get their medical exams, birth control, STD testing and treatment, life-saving cancer screenings. And that program also saves the state of Wisconsin, according to the Wall Street Journal, $140 million a year. So this is essential preventive care, whether you look at it from the individual level or from the state level. Mm-hmm. And I think that the difference that we see here in Wisconsin is that you have lawmakers who are aligning themselves with extreme organizations that oppose things like birth control, that oppose sex education, that oppose the most basic healthcare needs that women and men need for decades of their lives. And that's what I think is so outrageous, is that the personal beliefs of some politicians and their political organizations are, you know, based on the way that the state's been moving in the last few months, have really trumped our shared responsibility as a community and as a state to make sure that all people have their most basic reproductive health care needs met. It's one of the simplest things we can do to build strong families and strong communities in our state.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So the legislation that's coming down, is that not actually taken effect yet, or...?
Well, as of July 1st, the state budget took effect. So state funding and federal funds associated with these 9 health centers was eliminated. That's about $1 million for us. And as I'm sure you know, we are a nonprofit healthcare provider. And throughout our 75-year history as an organization in Wisconsin, we have dedicated our work to meeting the needs of people who have, you know, few other options, and we provide our services on a sliding fee scale for patients who aren't able to pay. You know, we're looking at all options to make sure that we can continue to care for these, you know, women and men who count on us. Like I said, there's 12,000 patients now, mm-hmm. whose most basic healthcare needs are in serious jeopardy. And that's just considering the cut to state budget, not to mention the 57,000 who are going to not only Planned Parenthood, but to other providers throughout the state who, depending on what happens with the Medicaid program, may soon find themselves without the access that they currently have. The state budget component has taken effect already. We're still waiting to see what happens with our Badger Care Family Planning Program. But we're doing everything we can to protect it, because this is just, it's just so important for people. I can't imagine how my life would have been different if I wasn't able to access reproductive health care now as I begin my career and when I was in college. And I think because we know that our patients are already struggling, it's a difficult economic time for a lot of families. We know that we're really important to the patients who count on us, so we're prepared to do whatever we can.
Because supposedly, at least at the moment, abortion is legal in this country, and the fact that so many of your services, something like 99% of them, do not cover abortion, it seems to me that that would be the key to any kind of lawsuit that would, because this legislation coming down seems to restrict people's ability to access medically authorized care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I think is really important is that the law that was just passed did not go after the abortion care provided at Planned Parenthood. It went after the birth control. It went after the annual exams. It went after the most basic medical care. And I think that what you are seeing here is that these are lawmakers who are opposed to birth control. Last session, we, Planned Parenthood, and the public health community and educators all across the state rallied around reforming our sex education statute, because we know that providing people with accurate, comprehensive information is so, so important. And you would think that that's the kind of thing people could agree on. But what we found was that that was one of the biggest struggles we ever encountered as advocates, was to make sure that teens were getting age-appropriate, medically accurate information. Scott Walker as well, he's the first governor in Wisconsin's history to ever seek, accept, and promote endorsement from Pro-Life Wisconsin, which is an organization that believes birth control pills cause abortion. In fact, they don't even think that a rape victim should have the opportunity to prevent pregnancy from an assault.
That's astounding.
With access to emergency birth control. It's very distressing, like I said. I think that it's, you know, the personal beliefs of very, very few that are going to have a big impact on the rest of us and on our most basic healthcare needs.
Mm-hmm. When I was doing some research on your organization, I was surprised to find out that, not surprised, but pleased to find out that you, that Planned Parenthood actually has community-based education programs, sex education for teens and young adults and teaching about STDs, et cetera. That's incredible that you have to do that, that that's not covered already in the schools. When I was in school, we did, even though it was very rudimentary, we did get some such sex education. They weren't ashamed to talk about it. Now it seems as though organizations like yourself have to take over that role.
It's a great point. You know, we began as an organization that this was, you know, before birth control pills even existed. And so we have really focused throughout our organization as a leading resource for reproductive health information and healthcare. So it's a very important part of what we do. We make sure that we, you know, we host education forums for parents and children to come in. We work with the faith community. We work with health professionals. You know, we are seen as a national and state leader on reproductive health information because it's so critical to our mission. And again, this is what's such an outrage here in Wisconsin, is that, you know, an organization like ours, who has been around for so long, and, you know, 1 in 5 women in the United States has visited a Planned Parenthood. In the past few years, we've been able to make some very, very important changes for women. We make sure now that emergency rooms provide rape victims with the information and access to birth control to prevent pregnancy from an assault. We passed a law to make sure that schools teach medically accurate and age-appropriate sex education. And we also, you know, protected women's right to access birth control at the pharmacy counter. So pharmacies have to make sure they have a pharmacist on duty, mm-hmm. willing to dispense birth control pills. Those laws took decades. And when he was in the state legislature, just for an example of where Scott Walker stands, one of his leading issues was to make sure that pharmacists could withhold women's birth control prescriptions. And in that fight, women came forward who, you know, tried to get emergency birth control filled, and then a pharmacist withhold the prescription. This happened actually in Milwaukee, and she became pregnant from that, and then had to deal with an unintended pregnancy because she was humiliated and berated by a pharmacist. We really are a leader in the healthcare community on these issues, and it is a minority of people who feel like we're not. But we're in the very unfortunate political reality right now where those are the people who are sitting in elected office.
Mm-hmm. Along that same line, I read where actually Governor Doyle had passed something called the Prevention First Initiative and the Contraceptive Equity and Prescription Protection Act. It was called the most proactive reproductive health policies in the history of Wisconsin legislature. Is some of that what has been negated by this recent legislation?
Well, that's a great example. So this Prevention First package, a series of legislation that was passed last session, we are very concerned that that's going to start to be chipped away. In Governor Walker's initial budget, he repealed the contraceptive equity law. It's a very, very basic law for women. It says that If an insurance plan covers prescriptions, they got to cover contraceptives the same way they would treat any other prescription.
Right.
You know, I know that, you know, every month when you're looking at a $40, $50 copay, that really adds up, particularly, you know, as a young woman in school or, you know, first getting your first job. So, you know, equity and insurance coverage is a very, very important issue for women. It goes straight to our pocketbook, and Governor Walker's budget would have repealed that law. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Thankfully, the Joint Committee on Finance pulled that from the budget.
Oh, okay.
So that was not ultimately a part of what he signed. But again, I think it's a very alarming indication that what this administration really wants to get at is women's access to birth control.
So what can our listeners do about this?
Yeah, well, I think there's some really important things for listeners to be aware of. First of all, I would encourage them to contact Planned Parenthood. One of the most encouraging things has been patients and former patients who've come out and advocated for protection of our work, whether it's in the media or by contacting their legislators. That's so important. They can visit our website is ppawi.org, Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin. We also are out in the community. We're tabling. We do phone banks. We call supporters all around the state. So there's a lot of opportunities to get involved to protect this work. And I'm also very excited to say that my colleague, Chris Taylor, was just elected to the legislature.
If we could step back just a little bit, there was another question I wanted to ask. And that was that I was surprised to find out how many males that Planned Parenthood actually treats for sex education, STDs, HIV/AIDS testing, and the like.
Yeah. You know, and that was another initiative under Governor Doyle. I mean, he understood that a very important part of the reproductive health equation in the state of Wisconsin is men. I mean, we need to make sure that they're getting tested, that they're getting treated, and that they are offered accurate education as well. Under his administration, under the last state budget he did, he expanded the Badger Care Family Planning Program to men. And in just a very short amount of time of implementation, 7,000 young men have signed
up,
which is so important. And Governor Walker has stated throughout this budget process, it was in his initial budget, was repealing men's coverage. You know, and again, that's 7,000 men who are getting, you know, basic preventive care, and the patients who in that process have come forward and talked about how important this was. A young man from Stevens Point was particularly vocal on this. He got a life-saving diagnosis early, so that he's able to get the resources and the health care that he needs in order to, you know, live with a new diagnosis. And he said, you know, look, if I would have had to pay out of pocket the hundreds of dollars for all the testing that I needed, you know, that in and of itself would be a challenge. Mm-hmm. And when you're talking about, you know, sexually related infections, you know, people not knowing their status is one of the biggest challenges when you talk about preventing transmission. And so the CDC, one of their top priorities is making sure that people get tested.
It's supposed to be, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. It's that people get tested. And so taking away, you know, taking away the programs that allow, you know, one half of our population to get tested, I think really is, it's just the wrong priority.
Well, we've run out of time, and I want to thank you very much, Amanda.
Sure, thank you.
Thank you, Gary. And now we turn to our story on Logisticare. MJ?
Hi, my name's MJ LaPlay for Health Writers on the Air. I'm speaking with Sean Doherty from the Cap Times. You also have a blog, and tell us the name of that blog.
Vital Signs.
In Vital Signs for the last, you've been writing about three articles on a new system of getting patients their medicines, getting rides to get their medicines, and also to their doctor's appointments, and that's called Logisticare. Do you want to update us on that?
Sure. Starting July 1 this year, a private company based in Atlanta took over the non-emergency medical transportation system for this state. So counties used to make these arrangements, and now this company called Logisticare is setting up rides for people who are Medicaid patients.
And I am a Medicaid patient, and the difficulty is with this July 1st recent entry into just basically taking it out of the hands of group health cooperative is where my family goes. Group health cooperative in the past would call Union Cab and get us a ride. And this was not something that we had to think about. Like, so if my child is sick with an earache after 3 days, and I feel like I want to take the child in the past, I would just call, talk to the nurse, and get the child in via a Union Cab ride. And now, the other day, when my child was feeling ill, it took me four times calling Logistic Care to finally get a ride with Madison Taxi, and this was after 4 hours or something.
Wow.
I missed my appointment. And then Madison Taxi said, we just got the call 15 minutes ago. So I had called them 4 hours earlier, and I'm me, so I know how to ask questions and how to kind of work the system and figure it out. But most people would have given up. And what they told me, I'll just tell you real quick. They say, you have two. I said, okay. They say right away, well, is it an emergency? And I said, no, my son's ill. I'd like to take him to the doctor and have his ears checked. And they say, well, I said, well, you know, you're supposed to call 2 days in advance. And I said, well, I can't plan my child's illness. Sorry. But what are my other options? Well, we have two for you. One, if you have a friend or family member that has a car, we'll reimburse them 24 cents a mile if they take you. And I said, well, I don't have a friend that has a car. So what's my other option? Second option is to have the nurse call. And so I called my nurse, and they had never done that before. They were very confused. So the nurse called and got us a cab, but then it never came. You know, called Logistic Care to get the ride. The ride never came at the time they were supposed to. We missed our appointment. I had to call the nurse and say, so call Logistic Care. So on that fourth call, I finally got that cab, Madison Taxi.
Wow, it sounds like a mess.
And it's a mess.
And your kid is probably fussing and,
exactly,
and miserable. Well, what you're describing is pretty much what people were quite concerned would happen when this privatized service took over in Wisconsin. As you know, I did write a story about the first days being pretty chaotic here in the state with a lot of people like you stranded and very frustrated cab companies as well who were given incorrect information about, you know, who to pick up and where to pick them up. So there's been a lot of confusion in the early days of this switch. I know it must be real frustrating for
well,
you.
I guess what I want to get to is that repeatedly, and I thought this would be a good taking off point, is two things came to mind today was, one, the line during those four conversations on the phone, and I waited sometimes 15, 20 minutes per call. And that's not including the times I had to call the group health nurse. Uh-huh. So we're working through the kinks, they would say. Got in the cab.
Yes, that is what Logistic Care says, is that this is to be expected in the early days and things will get better.
So here's the language. We're working through the kinks, says Madison Taxi, you know. And I said, well, you know, most of us with children who are not feeling well, you know, we don't work through kinks very well. You know, we get impatient and angry, you know. And so my point is like, I'm ready to sue Logistic Care, you know, like as far as their inability to get us where we need to go brings up the fact that there's no accountability when a private company comes in and is supposed to help reduce the number of rides, reduce how people use the system and abuse the system. And so on the other hand, people are suffering. And so how do we make Logistic Care aware of that? It's my understanding that you spoke with one of the main people.
I did. And it's really interesting to hear you say what you're saying, because Logistic Care makes a huge deal out of how its complaint rate is less than 1%. You will see that talked about constantly by their officials. And, you know, they do this in 37 other states and on their website, too, and all their advertising materials, and they boast about this complaint rate. But I'm wondering if you were even given information about where and how you could complain if you had problems like what you described.
Absolutely. There's one more phone call. It means I have to take a pen and write down one more phone number. And when you're already have missed a ride, okay, so as I explained, I called four times. I'm not going to make that fifth call.
Mm-hmm.
I'm already beat down enough that I'm not making that call.
Well, I think that is the concern that a lot of advocates have for patients and Medicaid patients, is that they are beaten down. They are dealing with sick children. Quite often we're talking about families who have children with disabilities who don't even know what to do. You made four calls. You didn't give up. I think the concern is that other families would give up. I spoke with a woman who contacted me desperate. She emailed me. She has a four-year-old son with disabilities. She lives outside Madison. She called the LogistiCare phone number. She said a very, very rude person asked her several questions and then said, "You don't qualify. You don't qualify for help anymore in terms of transportation," which she has been getting for months. And she was going to talk to me, and I was going to write about her, and she contacted me the very next day and said, "I can't do this. I'm terrified that they'll take away my other Medicaid benefits."
Wow. Okay, so we need to do something here. The other thing I was thinking about was, I have another question, but first I was thinking, you know, how do we figure out within our communities to get rides for people? I mean, that's something we're going to have to figure out with, you know, if it's not working for the medical, you know, group health, dean, if they're seeing complaints, you know, I think their rate is going to be a lot higher than 1%. And if we need them to start calculating their rate of complaints at the actual at-hand service, which is different than what they're saying at LogistiCare around the rate is under 1%. And is it because they say so? I mean, where do they get that number, LogistiCare?
Mm-hmm. Good question. I've been wondering the same thing.
Okay, so we're going to come back to this subject again, okay? You'll keep working on it on your end, and we'll work it on our end, health writers.
That sounds good.
Okay,
all
thank
right.
you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, MJ LaPlay. And now, a commentary on malpractice lawsuits from health writer Thomas Kozlowski.
H.R. 5, Limiting Your Rights to Malpractice Damages. The bill, H.R. 5, is called Help Efficient, Accessible, Low-Cost, Timely Health Care Act of 2011. It was introduced by U.S. Representative Phil Gringray, Republican from Georgia, in January. Representative Gringray, an obstetrician, was elected to Congress in 2002, and in 2007 was one of a number of doctors required to pay $500,000 in a malpractice settlement in a suit filed by a pregnant woman who lost her fetus due to inappropriate care and other complications. Christine Hines, Consumer and Civil Justice Counsel for Public Citizens Congress Watch Division, said, quote, "Representative Gringray wants to pick and choose who can go to court and for what purposes," unquote. How would H.R. 5 limit your rights in suing for malpractice by medical providers and medical and pharmaceutical companies? It would shield doctors, hospitals, nursing home operators, pharmaceutical companies, medical device manufacturers, and others from accountability if they provide substandard care or medical products. It would limit the punitive damages you could receive from doctors, hospitals, and others in the healthcare industry in a malpractice lawsuit. It would cap your non-economic damages at $250,000 for pain and suffering that accompanies any loss of normal function, such as blindness, paralysis, disfigurement, sexual functions, or loss of fertility. These caps would be most harmful to the catastrophically injured and poor patients, even rendering them unable to bring cases at all. Liability insurers of negligent doctors to pay damages periodically rather than a lump sum, even if your medical bills are accumulating now. It would disregard state laws, limit to 1 year the time period for malpractice victims to file a claim after an injury is discovered. For Health Writers, this is Thomas Kozlowski.
That does it for this week's edition of Health Writers on the Air. To listen to an archive of this and past programs, please visit our website at healthwriters.wordpress.com. I'd like to thank our engineer. Good night.